Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight, we discuss who pulled the plug on WWE Network's Talking Smack Show. Tonight, Global Force Wrestling's top star and world champion is suspended pending a domestic violence investigation. The Mae Young Classic is coming to the WWE Network, where the women take center stage, but which women will control this revolution? Wrestling Night in America starts now. Good evening, America. My name is Pat McNeil. This is Wrestling Night in America for Sunday, July 17th, 2016. Hello and how are you? And welcome to a new era in the PW Torch livecast. Going to turn things over to our co-host at this time, Mr. Greg Parks. Greg, how are things in the Sunshine State, sir?
Sunny and beautiful, as always. Thanks, Pat. And, you know, it's really nice to be here on the maiden voyage of Wrestling Night in America with you.
Well, thank you. It's different, but the same in that we still have some of the same technical issues, which I'll have to go over at some point with somebody else. All right, let's get on with the proceedings. Probably the first order of business, we'll go over some of the top stories of the week, and we're going to get ready to take your phone calls. We're expecting callers to check in with us from various locations. First of all, Greg, I think probably the surprise story of the weekend is WWE Network deciding to cancel Talking Smack, and the word leaking out from one of the Sports Illustrated writers that what happened, Greg, is that Mr. McMahon actually watched Talking Smack, and that's what led to this.
Given how different Talking Smack was than anything else WWE produces for mass consumption on Monday Night Raw and WWE SmackDown, it almost felt like it was a matter of time. Anytime you watch Talking Smack, it's almost, you got the feeling like, how are they getting away with this? And as you said, Pat, it's apparently because Vince McMahon didn't really watch the show. So,
yeah.
Entertaining, yes. It brought out a lot of different personalities and personality traits in wrestlers that we didn't get to see in the tightly scripted environment of SmackDown and Raw and shows like that that are under the WWE umbrella. So, of course, it got to go.
Yeah, and that's kind of upsetting. Apparently, we will still have a Talking Smack immediately following the WWE Battleground pay-per-view this coming Sunday, 1 week from tonight. So we got that going for us, which is nice. The other big story of the week, which it's still playing out, is that while Global Force Wrestling does have a world champion, and that champion is Alberto El Patron, he has been suspended pending the results of an investigation. When audio came out that made Alberto look not so good and didn't do much for the reputation of his girlfriend Paige.
Yeah, this was a tricky one because Global Force really isn't running any shows in the near future. So,
well,
what exactly?
It's what Impact used. It's what TNA used to be. It's now called Global Force.
Right. They're not running any shows, though, is what I'm saying. They're not having house shows that they're suspending them from. The TV's already in the can. So, you know, they're not pulling him from TV. So what exactly they're suspending him from is kind of up in the air, I guess. I guess if they were to run shows, he would be suspended from that. But, yeah, this, I think the frustrating thing is, and Paige has put out a response to what's gone on and tried to clear things up and tried to make it not look as bad for Alberto El Patron, her boyfriend. The optics are not good, if only because this has become a pattern of behavior from Alberto. This is not a one-off where we can excuse it and we can swallow Paige's excuse that she wrote out. This is more of the same from this guy who, you wonder what the future holds for him in GFW if this is going to continue.
Yeah, and, you know, it's it is, I don't know if I'd say ironic, funny, but it is ironic that people were tripping all over themselves to tell us after the drug test failures that that Paige and Alberto Del Rio, you know, may have tested positive for a certain white powdery substance. And this would seem to, and what the audio seems to back that up, although, you know, appearances can be deceiving and innocent until proven guilty and all that. It does not speak particularly well that this topic was discussed throughout, you know, the topic of Alberto's problems was discussed throughout the wrestling world over the course of the past year, and doesn't seem that the people who run Global Force took any notice of it.
And that's unfortunate, and unfortunately, just as it's part of a pattern of behavior for Alberto El Patron, this is also kind of a pattern of behavior of GFW/TNA/Impact Wrestling, where, you know, they've had people on top on the roster that probably should not be there because of things that have gone on outside the wrestling ring. This is certainly getting Jeff Jarrett's run of this now GFW/TNA amorphous blob of a company that they are now, I guess, getting them off to a bit of a rocky start. And that's not how you want it to be when you're rebranding. And quite frankly, the ratings have been on an uptick for Impact the last several weeks. And you kind of have to wonder if all this negative press that Alberto El Patron is getting for GFW is going to put a dent in those ratings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a I know the wrestling saying is that any publicity is good publicity, but this right now is in no way good publicity. They do have a few weeks in the can, and it looks like Alberto Del Rio is heavily featured on pretty much all those weeks, especially what seems to be brewing between him and Conan. But I guess we will have to wait and see. Tell you what, we are going to go to the phones right now. Rules are still the same as for pretty much any live cast I host, because we're going to try to get through some calls. You can ask up to three questions. You can make it to three comments at the end of the day.
Three, that's a magic number.
On that note, we'll go to the 862 area code, where I suspect we might be talking to Kylan from Newark, New Jersey. Hello, Kylan. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America.
Thank you, Pat. Nice to be here.
It is nice to have you on, Kylan. Please keep things moving along. What is your question, sir?
My question for this week concerns Battlegrounds.
Yes, next Sunday.
Who in your opinion is a dark horse candidate to win their respective match?
You mean who would be an upset pick?
Yes.
Okay, upset pick, I'm going to say, right now I'm going to say Baron Corbin. I mean, that would be kind of an upset, but not really. I don't know how big an upset that would be.
And that's unfortunate, because I think Nakamura could have come in with a lot more fanfare than he did. He got quite a bit, and WWE positioned him well, but I think there were a lot of misses as far as how they presented him to the SmackDown audience, to the point where, yeah, at this point in his run, a loss to Baron Corbin may not seem like an upset. I think right now you got to look at the women's five-way elimination match, in which the winner will be the number one contender to the SmackDown Women's Championship. That match is ripe for an upset. You've got Becky Lynch and Charlotte, who are probably the two favorites, just because of their history in WWE so far. Natalya, Tamina, and Lana. I think any one of those three getting a victory in this match would be an upset. And that's, just by the sheer numbers, that's where I would look for a match where I think there could be an upset.
That's a good call there. All right, what else, Kylan?
Okay. My second question concerns WWE financials and potential network plans. WWE officials recently announcing that they currently have plans to run a total of 3 tournaments a year, and with WWE scheduled to announce their quarterly report findings next Thursday.
Okay.
How do you think WWE Network subscriptions and financials will play out?
Let's see. Do you think? I know what you're talking about because they had talked. There's the women's tournament coming up. They're talking about doing another Dusty Tag Team Classic this fall. I don't know that that is going to have any bearing one way or another on the number of network subscriptions. Greg?
Yeah, I wonder that too. I get that they're offering a wider range with the women's Mae Young Classic as well, just offering a wider range of programming for the WWE Network to draw in more niche viewers. But I'm wondering if that's really going to increase it enough to make it noticeable when they present these findings. You know, is it going to be the normal uptick in subscribers, or is it going to be above and beyond? I don't see it being enough to be above and beyond the kind of trajectory that they're already on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Anything else, Carolyn?
My final question remains on the network.
Uh-huh.
Now that Vince McMahon made the decision to cancel Talking Smack as a weekly program, will the Talking Smack and Raw Talk episodes after pay-per-views feature more conventional promos like we're used to seeing on regular main roster programming, or the style of promos which we had already become accustomed to weekly on Talking Smack and Raw Talk when Raw Talk was
right.
A weekly program?
Okay, I don't think we know the answer yet, but I suspect that if Talking Smack is going to remain and Raw Talk are going to remain relatively short shows, as in less than an hour, we're going to get more conventional type promos and fewer things that come outside the box. Greg?
Yeah, definitely. If Talking Smack as a weekly show was canned because Vince McMahon didn't like the format, didn't like how it was as unscripted as it was, I think you'll see a big difference in Talking Smack this Sunday after the pay-per-view.
Okay.
I believe so too, unfortunately. Well, thanks, guys.
No problem. Thank you, Kylan. Look forward to speaking to you again.
Kylan
drops
off.
All right, Kylan drops off. That opens up a line for you, 515-605-9345. Tell you what, we are going to take a break. When we come back, more of your phone calls and more discussion of the week's events, and hopefully a guest. We're still working on that. Wrestling Night in America continues after this.
When you want to know when the next episode of the PW Torch Livecast is scheduled or catch up on a show you missed, check out our homepage, pwtorchlivecast.com. You can stream the latest shows right from that page, or download the show, or get a link to subscribe on a podcast app. That's pwtorchlivecast.com for the latest shows, and also catch up on shows you missed at pwtorchlivecast.com.
Wrestling Night. We're back with more Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. Torch columnist Pat McNeil alongside Torch columnist Greg Parks. And we're reminding all of you that coming this Tuesday to the Podcast One Radio Network, it will be the Wade Keller Show. A lot of the features that you're used to hearing from Wade's appearances on the live cast are going to be part of the Wade Keller Show. And we really know that We would really love for you to subscribe to it. So subscribe now, subscribe twice, subscribe for six or seven other people. Go to Podcast One or to iTunes or your favorite subscription service and take care of that now. All right, we are continuing on with the program, and we have more of your calls and hopefully emails to get to. 515-605-9345 is how you reach us. The other way, of course, is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. Greg, let's talk a little bit about the Mae Young Classic. We had the thing is that while most of the matches here have taken place already, they were recorded over two nights. Folks are going to be seeing them over 10 weeks. It's going to be stretched out much like the Cruiserweight Classic was. But it's really incredible some of the people who are in this, that people who you never expected to see in anything resembling a WWE show with the WWE logo.
And that's kind of how I felt watching the Cruiserweight Classic, too. And I think it just shows how WWE, at least for the purposes of these tournaments, have really widened the search net as far as who they're looking at and who they want to bring in. Because you're right. I mean, it is from just like the Cruiserweight Classic, from all countries, from all backgrounds. Everybody was they really did a good job scouting for this and bringing in as many talented people as they could, mixing in a few of their WWE NXT developmental women as well in this Mae Young Classic. So. The reports from the two nights of tapings was it was a hot crowd. I think somebody on Twitter even said it was hotter than the crowds for the Cruiserweight Classic when they aired at Full Sail as well. So really looking forward to see how it turns out when they begin airing on the WWE Network.
Yeah, and I mean that's the sort of audience that they've come to. When people heard about the Mae Young Classic, I mean that NXT Full Sail audience, they keep track of professional wrestling. They know they know who the people are internationally, and if they haven't, they studied up. So it's going to be very interesting. Let me go over I'm going to go over the first round matchups. I'm not going to give out winners here, though. Kaylee Ray versus Princessa Sujit. Math Luchador. Serena Deeb is back, taking on Vanessa Bourne. I thought Serena Deeb was retired, but I guess not. Shayna Baszler and Zeta. Yes, Shayna Baszler is part of the Mae Young Classic, and that brought out the four horsewomen to Full Sail, both four sets of four horsewomen, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you got to wonder if that's going to play into a future storyline now.
I would not be the slightest bit surprised if they did. It would sort of recharge the women's division, because it feels like the original WWE NXT horsewomen of Bayley and Sasha and Becky and Charlotte they might be lost in the shuffle right now. Piper Niven taking on Santana Garrett. Santana Garrett, or Brittany, you probably remember her from TNA. Mia Yim, also from TNA, again, taking on Sarah Logan, who I believe is the name that Crazy Mary Dobson has been using. Yes, that sounds right.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. Matter of fact, there are pictures on Twitter out already of Shayna taunting the four horsewomen in the crowd, and I guess this is going to be part of the story. It's going to be very neat. Okay, Mercedes Martinez taking on Xian Li from China. I watched the very first Shimmer shows on DVDs and on videotape, and if you had told me Mercedes Martinez would be in the WWE one day, I would probably tell you that I probably would have told you a dozen years ago that you were mistaken.
Yeah, that's a sentiment I've heard from other people too, is that they're happily surprised that she was in this tournament.
Exactly. Okay, Miranda Salinas taking on Rhea Ripley. Abby Lath against Jazzy Gabert. Abby Lath, I believe, is Kimberly, former Chikara Grand Champion. Jazzy Gabert apparently was a huge hit during the course of the tapings. Okay, it's Ayesha Raymond and Tony against Tony Storm of Progress. Nice. Dakota Kai against Kavita Devi. Dakota Kai is Evie, the New Zealander who was a big hit in Shimmer. Let's see. Candice LeRae against Renee Michelle. Renee Michelle, I know her. She's an indie wrestler from Maryland, worked for Maryland Championship Wrestling. Candice LeRae is the wife of Johnny Gargano. And, yes, I believe Johnny Gargano is going to be you're going to get to see him on TV as part of this.
Mm-hmm.
We also, let's see. Sorry, I've got this. Also, Rachel Evers, a.k.a. Rachel Ellering, is there. Marty Bell is actually taking on Rachel Ellering in a first-round matchup. Bianca Belair against Sage Beckett. I know the people inside NXT are high on Bianca Belair. Lacey Evans against Tainara Conti. Not familiar with Tainara, but I guess I will be soon. Nicole Savoy against Reyna Gonzalez. And the 16th and final match of the first round, which is the one everybody is going to be talking about, Kairi Sane against Tessa Blanchard. Kairi is the young lady from Stardom who is a... I wouldn't say she's even the next Asuka, but she was considered prior to this the best non-WWE female wrestler in the world, and all eyes are going to be on her as we head into the Mae Young Classic.
Yeah, you kind of felt like coming into this that she was the sort of the ringer in the tournament, especially now that she's got a contract, WWE contract in hand. But it'll be interesting to see how she's booked and see how far she goes versus some of the other women who are kind of one-offs and some of the other women that are also, still under contract with WWE.
Yes, I've also at this moment, Shine 44 is taking place here on Floor Slam. And you know what? Watching stuff, what WWN stuff live on Floor Slam is actually very good as opposed to trying to watch something on demand. Aja Parara is making her way to the ring. And, we're seeing, with Shine, with Shimmer, with Rise, which is another promotion run by Kevin Harvey of Shimmer that's going to be running in England, we're definitely seeing a situation where not only is women's wrestling being taken more seriously, but they've developed the means to restock the brand every so often.
And I think that coincides really with the rise of independent wrestling in general. We're seeing more opportunities for more people, more different kinds of people out there on the independent wrestling scene. And for as many talents as WWE is bringing in and sort of hoarding in WWE and NXT and being more open to bringing in people who have been successful elsewhere, we're seeing the independent scene really restock itself, as you said, and replenish itself. And that goes for the women, too. That's sort of... I don't want to say trickle down because that makes it sound like the women's promotions are below the indie promotions, which they're not. I mean, Stardom and Shine and Shimmer have done terrific business and have put on great shows themselves. So I think they go hand in hand, really. The successful women's promotions and indie promotions in general having as much success around the world. Really? I mean, it's not just America. You know, the UK scene is big. Australia and New Zealand, a lot of people are talking up. Is that, that's going to be the next really burgeoning independent scene where you're going to see a lot of folks come over from. So if you're an independent wrestling fan, this is a very exciting time.
Yes, it is. And, there's a lot to look forward to in the next 12 weeks or so. All right, don't make me regret this, but we're going to go to a phone call. I believe this is going to be DJ in Miami. DJ, welcome to Wrestling Night in America.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
The usual. How about you? What's on your mind?
I got a couple questions. My first thing is, how can I start? I don't know I don't really know what they're gonna do with him after he's complaining, saying, all this stuff, and he's not happy. And then now he's saying that he's super not happy backstage that him and Cass got, took apart. So
is this the Enzo Amore? Just to be clear.
So do you guys really think that one, he'll ask for his papers, the walking papers, sooner in the next couple of months? Or two, do you think that they'll put him back at NXT? Because I don't know what they're going to do with him because he needs to rebuild or something.
All right, Enzo Amore. I'll let you touch on this, Greg, but let me start this by saying Enzo Amore is popular. And he's a popular mid-card wrestler, probably more popular than what his ranking on the roster is. And, you know, he's talked about, he's selling merchandise. And I think that as long as that is happening, he is going to stay on the main roster, whether it's Raw or SmackDown. Greg?
Yeah, I think Wade Keller and I talked about this last week on the post-Raw live cast, and there are so many options for a guy like Enzo. You know, he can be either a heel or a babyface manager, really. I think it could go either way. As much as managers are not used today by WWE, I think he's special enough that they would make an exception in his case. I think, putting him in the cruiserweight division and adding some juice to that, adding some personality to 205 Live, which just lost a big personality with Austin Aries being released. I think I don't know if his skill set is the traditional cruiserweight, but he certainly fits those parameters, and they could try to, you know, get him away from the heavyweight division and what would happen with him being, you know, what we saw with Big Cass on Sunday night. I think that would be Enzo's future if he stayed in the Raw heavyweight division. So putting him in the cruiserweight division puts him on a little more equal footing. You could do that. You could keep him on Raw or SmackDown just as kind of a Goldust R-Truth level mid-carder who is over as an opening act on a house show, who can get the fans into it early but isn't going to win a lot. I mean, there are spots for guys like that. So I really think there are a lot of things on the main roster that you can do with a guy like Enzo without having to send him back to NXT or anything like that.
Yeah, had a flash of the idea of Enzo feuding with Goldust on Raw. That would be interesting to say the least. But, you know, I mean, what Greg says makes a good point. I mean, look, you know, Titus O'Neil was treated as nothing on Raw. And, I mean, his addition to 205 Live, as unlikely as it seems, has actually really helped. It's given, you know, I mean, he's this goofy, incompetent, I guess, babyface type, but it's really given, you know, it's given Tozawa something to play off of, and I think it's made for a better show there. Anything else?
Yeah, my second thing is the Austin Aries thing. Do you guys think that he will walk into Global Force Wrestling because Alberto will be suspended, or we'll see what's up with that? Do you think he'll probably be champion in the next couple months because of this problem with Alberto?
It depends on what comes of this, but it's not looking good for Del Rio's long term future. I mean, I would be surprised if he made it out of. I would be surprised if he actually made it to Bound for Glory at this point as champion. Greg.
Certainly his status in Global Force is up in the air. You've got some top guys in Global Force, however, who could take that mantle from Alberto El Patron before Austin Aries. And it's certainly not a lock that Aries is going to Global Force. He's got a history in that company. He's been successful in that company before. So it's certainly not out of the question. Mm. But you've got guys like Bobby Lashley. You've got guys like EC3. So you've got some guys at the top of the card right now in Global Force who I think might be better options to have as champion if Global Force decides that this El Patron situation is getting a little too sticky for their liking and they decide to move on from him as champion. I think one of those guys is a better choice at this point than Austin Aries. And you've got to remember how the optics would look for Global Force, too. Bringing in a guy who was not even champion in the cruiserweight division in WWE, coming in and making him champion in your brand, you know, there's certainly people who would look at that and say, you know, here's a guy who couldn't become cruiserweight champion in WWE, and what does that say about the Global Force talent level? But, you know, they may not care about that either because he has been champion in Global Force before in TNA.
And you know what? It's worth noting, DJ and Greg, that, you know, Bobby Lashley, they're in the process of turning him babyface. So there is somebody who can, you know, who not only could take over the top spot, but could be a top babyface. Now, after a month from now, will they gladly exchange, you know, Austin Aries' problems for Alberto Del Rio's problems? It might be too soon to say, but you can definitely find a use for Austin Aries. I wouldn't mind seeing an Austin Aries low-key feud because both of them have a lot of personality, even if they rub people the wrong way. Just something to think about. What do you got? Okay.
I guess that's it until tomorrow. Next week. Thanks so much.
Hey, no problem. Thank you, and we hope to hear from you next week as well. Okay, DJ drops off. The number is 515-605-9345. We are overdue for a commercial timeout. When we come back, we hope to have more of your calls, chat room questions, and we hopefully will have a guest, so don't go away.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit, and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, the Wrestling Night in America continues here on PW Torch Livecast. The number is 515-605-9345. I'm here. Greg Parks is here. You're here. And really, that's all that matters. We have an exciting lineup of livecasts coming over the course of the next week, and you'll be hearing much more about them. But right now, we have a busy week ahead of us, which I think we'd like to get to. Greg, we have what should be an interesting episode of Raw tomorrow night, where not only do we get match number 3 between Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe, but we also get to find out what the deal is with Kurt Angle.
And that's probably something WWE is going to save for the final segment of the show, wanting that third hour bump, and we saw them be successful with that when they drew out the big Cass Enzo storyline and saved that reveal for the final segment. It really helped the third hour rating there as well. So if you really want to find out what Kurt Angle was up to, it's probably best to tune in later rather than earlier. But like you said, yes, we will have Roman Reigns, Samoa Joe as well tomorrow night. And you know, a lot of theories running wild about this Kurt Angle thing. Is it involve Dixie Carter? Does it involve some sort of offspring of Kurt Angle's that we don't know about? So I think those are really the two strongest theories I've seen so far. People really parsing Kurt Angle's promos, his phone calls, his discussions with Corey Graves, using the wording that he's used to try to put together what this could be, what this could not be. I don't know, Pat. Do you have a guess, a wild theory maybe that hasn't been mentioned yet, or do you kind of your opinions fall in line with things we've supposed for the last week?
I am leaning towards Kurt Angle having an illegitimate child on the roster, and whoever said Jason Jordan, that might be a good guess here based on some of the stories Kurt Angle has been involved with, and it wouldn't really hurt Angle that much. A lot of people have thought they're going to go with Kurt Angle with the Kurt Angle's gay storyline. I'm not crazy about that as a stunt idea, but I could get behind it if we reveal that the person that Kurt was saying I love you to was Mr. McMahon. That I could probably go for. All right, let's call our guest. Hold on. Here we go. Stand by, people. This should be interesting. And we're going to have to do some major thanking right here.
Aloha.
Hello. Hello. May I speak to our guest for this evening?
That depends. Who's calling, please?
This is Pat and Greg on Wrestling Night in America on the PW Torch Livecast. And,
hi, I'm Kevin.
Okay, here we go. Hold on.
To introduce our guest star,
haven't done this in a while.
Time to do, so it really makes me happy to introduce to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, the head of Rise Wrestling, part of the Shimmer Wrestling office, and announcer for AAW, please welcome Mr. Kevin Harvey. Kevin, thank you for the last minute... for allowing us to call you at the last minute. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. It's usually not too hard to get me to do a media spot for anybody. It's just you picked the rare 15 minutes I was actually taking care of personal business. So here we are. Glad it worked out.
Yeah. You had a busy weekend, Kevin, and we'll talk about this briefly. Actually, you've had a busy week because you had the Shimmer tapings, which wrapped up last weekend. And then you had AAW this weekend, a big show there in Illinois with Sami Callihan and Kevin, and I think Keith Lee headlining.
yes, that ended up being the main event last night for the AEW title. Sami Callihan defeated Keith Lee in the main event last night to retain. And, oh, gosh, 10 other big matches last night. 11-match card. Long night, but a whole lot of quality wrestling going on. And a good bookend to a pretty insane, really, like, week and a half, almost two straight weeks when you boil down everything that happened since the end of June.
Okay, yeah, let's talk briefly about what's going on with the Mae Young Classic. And the reason I mention that is because I'm looking at the people who are in the Mae Young Classic in WWE. And I know Dave Prezak was down there this weekend. He was kind of coy about what exactly he was doing there. Mercedes Martinez, the Shimmer champion, she's part of the tournament. Tessa Blanchard, Shimmer tag team champion, she's part of the tournament. Mia Yim, Nicole Savoy. A whole lot of Shimmer going on there.
Yeah, I saw a fan, I think, that actually calculated it, and I believe 44% of the field was what they'd calculated, was either current Shimmer roster members or had been on prior Shimmer volumes. And
yeah,
what a number to be proud of for everybody involved with Shimmer.
Yeah, but I think what stood out to me most when I think about it is, you know, I'm pretty sure 100% of the trainers down there in the Performance Center for the women's division are Shimmer alums.
If not that, very close to it.
Yeah, and they did a nice presentation for Sarah Amato, Sarah Del Rey. Let's see. So, I mean, who would, in your opinion, out of everybody who's part of, we haven't given away any of the results for the first few rounds because most people are going to watch this on the network, but who do you think that newcomers are going to be the most excited, are going to take to most quickly? Who should our fans watch?
Now, are we talking about for the Mae Young, like new talent a WWE fan would see in the Mae Young?
Yeah.
I think for a WWE fan, Mercedes Martinez is going to blow minds. To see somebody who has 16 years of experience in the ring, if not 17 now at this point, I forget if we crossed her anniversary date yet or not this year.
Right.
But to see somebody bring that level of experience to a field that the experience level is all over the map. I believe there's a person or two in the field that maybe has not had any matches publicly. I may be wrong on that.
Yeah,
not, that is gospel.
Well, there are some people who are green who are not Chelsea Green. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's not a dig at anybody. That's just the nature of it. It's a business with people who are brand new and people who've been around 15, 20, 30, 100 years at this point. And Mercedes, in my opinion, is definitely somebody that a casual fan of WWE product is probably going to say, who is that and how do I see more of her? Same could be said for any of her trifecta stablemates, Nicole Savoy, Shayna Baszler. I mean, I guarantee I'm going to leave names out from the field just from people who I know were in the state of Florida without actually spoiling anything in terms of who was in it, not in it, trying to maintain the integrity of those who don't want it spoiled. Just the field is tremendous. And I think clearly anybody that has been through Shimmer, I would be lying if I said I was capable of removing all bias from those opinions, but those three in particular, and including those in the Mae Young Classic who are known to be signed to WWE, Dakota Kai, Abby Leif, other people whose new names I'm probably forgetting right now.
That's okay.
But I don't want to be that guy who only calls people by their old indie name.
No, but that's actually probably going to be useful. Nicole Matthews, it was my understanding. I mean, she's part of this, and they have released all 32 of the names. So by mentioning the names, I don't think we're hurting anybody. But I was really surprised that Mercedes Martinez was in, not because she's not talented, but because she's one of those people. And back in 2005, you're like, there's just no way that WWE would ever use some of these people because of the way it was at the time. I know Nicole Matthews is as good as she's, a couple of years ago she was as good as she's ever been. What's been happening with her for the past couple of years?
Yeah, Matthews is one of the gold standards for women's independent wrestling right now. And I think just to be any talent that was there in that building by WWE invitation, I think that's an absolute honor because the landscape of WWE, anybody from the most casual fan's perspective to somebody that's been around wrestling for a very long time, you can see the landscape has changed in the last several years, and you can see rejuvenation. I don't even know if it's rejuvenation, just a flat out new focus and just the emphasis that they're placing on their women's division. It's exciting to see. I think some people might think that people in positions like Dave Prazak, Allison Dangers, or myself, or anyone associated with Shimmer or Rise would probably be sweating quite a bit. But it's something that I think is going to benefit an entire industry, as opposed to completely depleting the independence of talents like I think some people may believe is happening. I think there's a lot of good things going on, and I see nothing but good coming from here.
Yeah, I mean, the shine is going on right now, and it doesn't look like they've run out of female wrestlers. Let's just put it that way.
No, and back in November when we did the first Rise, we kind of had the thought of, okay, we'll see if we get a couple of people for the seminar. Who would be interested in Rise Seminar? Well, 40 girls later, we said, okay, I guess there's a little bit of a demand for this.
Yeah, and that's, and it's great in my view that women's wrestling is becoming more mainstream and less of a show place for bikini models. Not that I have anything against bikini models, mind you. So let me make sure. I just want to make sure I'm understanding this correctly, Kevin. The two feeder promotions for Shimmer are called Rise and Shine.
Well, that's give me one second. I'm actually switching out of the car. Got to do this so I don't hang up.
Yeah.
And we're there. You still got me? All right. Cool.
Oh, yes.
So what Shine is certainly affiliated with Shimmer. Shimmer has had our events on WWN product for iPay-per-view, and I think most fans would know they're part of the distribution process for the video. And then Rise is the seminar and live event concept where we legitimately book a portion of the show based on what we see out of the talents in the seminar. And then a lot of those have moved on to get opportunities in Shimmer, as multiple people have gone on to have opportunities either outside of wrestling or gone on to WWE or otherwise unavailable to the independents. A number of girls, I think it's north of 20 now, that have received either, say, a dark match opportunity or a debut on the main Shimmer roster since November to now, and really in two Shimmer tapings.
But I'm saying that Rise 4 is going to take place in the UK. I mean, this isn't
your
average small indie promotion. Yeah.
No, and the way I'm looking at it is Rise 3 just happened, and the first two Rise events happened exactly as they needed to, and I think Rise 3 was really where we hit our stride of what we want the live events to be. But you can't always start exactly where you want to be. There's some growing pains. There's some very strategic things we had to do on Rise 1, then Rise 2. Rise 3 happened, and now Rise 4. It's probably going to be that thing that I think in a few months people will talk about and go, that was too big of a risk, or that's the thing that put them on the map. And I can tell you, based on my day off today and about 6 to 7 hours of work that I've got into different things promoting an event, on the other side of the planet, I don't want this to fail. I won't allow it to fail. And for us to be trying to seek the best talent worldwide, I think it's ignorant for us to only do events in U.S. markets or North American markets, like, say, Toronto, because I've been working with some promotions up there to try to hammer some things and get a Rise event there. This is a big one. It is a personal gamble. It's a professional gamble. But it's a gamble that I feel has to happen to really put a concept like this on the map.
Okay. Let's see. I'm watching Shine right now, and Shotzi Blackheart is making her way to the ring. And, she looks like the cross between a roller derby queen and a biker, I think would be a fair way to say it.
Well, Shotzi is one of the discoveries we found through Rise. She is somebody who I did not have any knowledge of prior to Rise, and clearly I have an investment in her as the Phoenix of Rise champion. And all of the talents that we've discovered through there, like Angel Dust, now known as Dust, like Britt Baker, like Chelsea Green, who we clearly knew who Chelsea was, but she kind of came to us through the Rise program in Los Angeles, and Kikio and Delilah Doom, and I could list names upon names upon names. Now Deanna Purrazzo, now Jules Malone. That these girls came to us for that opportunity and showed us something that really wanted us to, really made us want to invest in them, to have them be part of our shows for Rise and opportunities on Shimmer. And Shotzi is one of those girls that if Rise had not happened, I don't know that we would have necessarily known her at this point. Mm-hmm. And she was a critical part of Rise, has been a critical part of Rise to this moment. And over the past Shimmer weekend, she was one of the girls who was actually on all four DVDs that were taped of Shimmer.
Okay. Tell you what, Kevin, if you could hang with us for just a minute through our commercial here. Greg, do you have a question before we go to break?
Well, I just wanted to ask Kevin, you know, he's you know, working with Rise and Shimmer and working with AAW, as you mentioned. Pat and I were talking earlier about how this is just a really great time if you're a fan of WWE, because they are pulling all of these wrestlers from the independents, something that, you know, as fans 10 years ago, we never thought WWE would do. And still there was a fear by those who watched the independents closely that, you know, what kind of effect was this going to have on the indie scene? And, you know, how impressed are you that the indie scene has kind of responded by just really picking right back up and finding guys when WWE signs guys or GFW signs guys, and just finding all these women and men, these talented women and men, and continuing to build really a successful independent scene out there right now, not just in America, but elsewhere?
I think the key thing when I look at almost any independent that you could name that is truly having success, and by success I mean sellout crowds or large crowds that either completely fill the venue or sell out turnaways. When I look at some of those top ones, and I'm not going to name drop them, I'll just name drop AAW because I was there last night. I've been around AAW for north of 10 years, I think, now it's at this point. And I think the thing that's changed is everybody really is collaborating. Like, it doesn't take a genius to say, hey, that guy was in Chicago last night, maybe Pro Wrestling Guerrilla the next night, or Wrestle Circus, or maybe Glory Pro Wrestling with Michael Elgin down in St. Louis. These promotions are working together to work out things like travel, and how can we all still protect our own thing instead of this very territorial, quasi-territory system? Then people can still protect their own, but they can still work together with people maybe in different geographic areas, achieve these successes and these crowds that we're getting. And though, say, 600 for an AAW show is not, say, 60,000 in a pay-per-view venue, for AAW, that's a big – 600 people fills their biggest venue. That's a great thing to see that business just continue to grow. And WWE is clearly working with some of the independents. I mean, we could use Progress as the example. I mean, the WWE UK champion is, as far as I know, still actively involved in Progress on a regular basis, as well as several of the different guys that were featured in the UK tournament.
Right. Okay. Well, we probably have a few more questions for you, and I'm sure some of our listeners will, at 515-605-9345. We'll be back more Wrestling Night in America following this. Time out. Don't you go anywhere.
Rich Fan, formerly of the Primetime Friday Laughcast with Bruce Mitchell here. I want to tell you about my new show, The Deep Dive with Rich Fan. On Saturdays at 6 p.m. Eastern weekly, join us as we dive into a single subject, some weeks as serious as race, gender, and stereotyping in wrestling, to as fun as which IC champs could fit into another era, and anything in between. We'll have guests from inside and outside the Torch family to cover the subject of the week, and of course your calls and emails. Prior to each episode, I'll put out on social media the subject and some notes, places where you can also bone up on the subject of the week if you're so inclined. I'll also devote shows to two of my favorite international promotions, New Japan Pro Wrestling and Progress. All are welcome. No secret handshakes here, because Saturday nights on the live cast are officially all right for diving.
Wrestling Night in America continues here on PW Torch Livecast. Torch columnist Pat McNeil, Torch columnist Greg Parks, and yes, Kevin Harvey of Shimmer, AAW, and Rise. I didn't even get to come up with a cool sound effect for Rise. We didn't have time. Kevin, last night in AAW, I mean, it was another one of those weird mixes of talents. You get everything from John Morrison and Colt Cabana in the opener to, as we talked about, Sammy Callahan, Keith Lee, A.R. Fox. That's a lot of moving parts. Are we getting to the point where AAW is going to be one of the Northeast indie promotions that runs 4-hour shows?
Well, last night was definitely not a short show. I will give it that much. It was 11 matches long. I believe we rang the opening bell precisely at 7:30 or maybe 7:31.
That's
indie wrestling, let's face it. And I want to say the show wrapped up somewhere between 11 and 11:30, and it is a very involved show to watch, but it's something that, having seen AAW go from, you know, I've been in shows in the Berwyn Eagles Club where we had probably south of 50 people there, And last mm-hmm. night was several hundred people there. And to see them grow to draw these crowds consistently and the level of talent that they're able to attract and the new levels of fans they're able to attract, it's just such a great thing to see, because I've known the owners of AEW for a very, very long time, and to know what they put into it, personal and professional sacrifice, and to see it finally bearing fruit after all these years. I think AEW turns, 14 or 15 this year. I might be off on that.
That's amazing.
It's definitely not an infant promotion.
No, I would say not. There was a lot of talks a few months ago about YouTube clamping down on its advertising revenue and how that was going to affect indie wrestling. Do you have any knowledge of how that's happened, either with your own work or from the AEW owners?
That's something that I know there are definitely promotions out there that were what you would probably say more severely impacted by the decisions of YouTube and the advertisers. I can tell you, I personally, with Rise, I did not make 1 cent off of YouTube as a promotion that only started in November. It's not like it was rich with content and hundreds of thousands of subscribers and people that are clamoring over the next Rise promo or match that was going to drop. I do know that there are promotions out there that, and I certainly don't want to speak for them and won't necessarily name them here, that were pretty, they were hit pretty hard in terms of the revenue that they've generated. And most of those have been very outspoken publicly about the negative impact it's had on their business. I can say for me personally, I can't say that it had really much of a change. I would be lying if I said I wasn't hoping to maybe grow the YouTube revenue stream a bit more. And it's something where YouTube isn't now suddenly unimportant or that needs no focus, but people are having to explore different ways. There's more than just YouTube out there to get you video to stream or to get your content into the mobile device or into the computer or into the set-top box of people who want to acquire your content legally over an internet connection. And just like everything in wrestling, if no one would have wanted this to happen, but it's going to be an agent of change, and that's not always a bad thing, but it is definitely a bump in the road for some major promotions out there.
Yes, indeed. Who in AAW, if there's somebody here who only watches WWE, who in AAW would probably impress them the most, or who are we most likely? Who would likely impress them the most?
Well, right now, I'd be remiss if I didn't say Sami Callihan, the AAW heavyweight champion currently,
mm-hmm.
came back to AAW after having a pretty successful run there before going to the NXT system, and then Sami left the WWE system and came back to the independents with a vengeance, and Sami has just put on main event match after main event match. And if somebody's unfamiliar with Sami Callihan, watch virtually anything he's done in AAW, because he always puts in a tremendous effort and main event worthy matches, if not the literal main event of that show. Sami just always tears it up. Keith Lee is somebody who is kind of just broken out in huge ways in a lot of places. He's been on a number of AEW shows this year. Michael Elgin is somebody who was really a standard bearer as AEW heavyweight champion for a long time, had a very famous feud with Silas Young that I think if people can only name an AAW match before the modern era, they can probably speak to Michael Elgin and Silas Young in the program they had back around 2011 or 2012, somewhere in there. Elgin, after going to, he was with Ring of Honor for a while and wasn't available to AAW and now has been back in the mix at AAW,
right,
just continuing to turn out tremendous matches, whether it be singles or in his tag team with Brian Cage, and just absolutely every time just leaving everything he's got in the ring.
Okay, let's see. Since I'm watching Shine Wrestling right now, who would, obviously, most of the ladies on this show were not part of the Mae Young tournament, but who should we have our eye on from here?
Well, not knowing completely how the field has broken down for Shine and the Nova title tournament that they're doing this weekend, I know Shotzi is down there. As far as I know, she was out of the tournament, but I think people will be entertained by Shotzi Blackheart in any capacity. I'm not sure if Kikyo is on the show today for Shine. I know she actually did the Sparkle Showcase match before the main pay-per-view card yesterday, and I've heard directly from some people affiliated with Shine that they were very impressed with what Kikyo did in the ring in that match. And, gosh, who else is left in the field? Help me out here.
Okay, let's see. All right, Priscilla Kelly, Leah Vaughn, Pereira, Kira Hogan, Maria. Well, that's got to be quite a name. Aria Blake, Jordan Grace, Candy Cartwright.
I would say keep your eyes on Aja Pereira. She actually was just up for the Shimmer and Rise weekend, and she had really solid outings, really connected with the crowd. So when I think of her, I think of somebody that is really just starting to hit those moments of truly connecting with fans. And I think she's right on that level of you're probably going to start to see her more and more places, and that's going to be a name that's going to become of a little bit more significance. Not saying she's insignificant now, but people move their way up cards or up sort of the echelon of what people would perceive as the talent rung ladder, I suppose. And I see her being somebody that's going to ascend pretty quickly.
Oh, forget about Maria, because apparently that was Allison Kay in a lucha mask. So.
Yeah, I saw something, GIF or something on the internet today with the unmasking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, all of that is good. Let's see. So when you talk about your set-top box or over-the-top platform, is there any plans to get Rise in front of a larger audience in that way?
The short answer is yes. The longer answer is that is probably going to vary. As we travel to different areas and partner with different promotions, we will be a bit reliant on what the other promotions bring to the table and what we have available to us. Dave and I are looking at options for what can we do in the Berwyn building or in the Chicago area in terms of internet pay-per-view, but a huge factor in that is you need reliable internet connections, and the Berwyn Eagles Club itself only got Wi-Fi probably within the last 2 years, and let's just say it's not the most stable internet connection in the world, and it's something where we're going to do it, we want to do it and do it right and not have what so many internet pay-per-view or live stream companies have gone through where people have paid money and now Twitter is ablaze with the feed is frozen. It's far from a perfect technology, but it's something where the way that Dave works and the way that I try to work is if we're going to do something, let's actually do it right the first time. Let's measure as much as we possibly can so it doesn't turn into an on-the-fly growing pain.
All right, Kevin. Listen, thank you for taking so much time out of a Sunday night where you probably needed some sleep. Tell all the listeners how they can keep tabs on you via social media and all the products you represent.
Well, I'd say don't worry about following me too much. Worry about the companies that I am lucky enough to be a part of. Shimmer, shimmerwrestling.com, at Shimmer Women on all social media platforms. Rise, developing tomorrow's women athletes, at Rise DTWA. Website is wrestlingpipeline.com. If you really want to hear my thoughts and musings or see pictures of my cats, at Kevin Harvey, WPWC.
Right, cat pictures are big here on the live cast. So thank you very much, Kevin. We really appreciate you coming on, and hopefully we get to talk to you again as the year continues.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, Kevin Harvey from Rise AEW and Shimmer. All right, we are coming up on a hard break. When we come back, we will get around to talking about the big Battleground pay-per-view. And don't forget, next week we'll be on immediately following Battleground on most of these livecast stations. Should be approximately 11 p.m. Eastern. Taking lots of your phone calls, and we'll be running down the show. Greg, what are you most excited about on WWE Battleground?
Well, I'm excited, obviously, about the AJ Styles-Kevin Owens rematch for the United States Championship. I think that's going to be interesting. There's part of me that says, give me that Punjabi prison match. There's part of me that says, I want to see that. As much as the rest of me knows that's probably not a good idea, there is a small part of me that is filled with intrigue over seeing that match again.
It's like going out to Korean barbecue and then, and then before a big meeting.
I suppose
probably,
so.
You want it, but it's not a great idea.
Yep.
All right. Hold on a moment. Okay. Anyway, we'll continue that. We're taking more of your calls. 515-605-9345. Anybody reporting in from the Lexington or Tallahassee shows tonight from WWE, go ahead and give us a call or drop us an email, pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. We will be right back after this timeout.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com. You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Wrestling Night in America returns on PW Torch Livecast. I am Torch columnist Pat McNeil, joined by Torch columnist Greg Parks. The number here is 515-605-9345. We are here every Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Well, actually, that's most Sundays. Then the other Sundays will be on immediately following the Sunday night pay-per-view. Right now, we're limiting that to WWE and Global Force, but who knows? Maybe these Shine pay-per-views are going to take off, Greg.
It's a possibility.
Yep. All right. And now is the time to focus on next week's pay-per-view. We'll be on immediately following Battleground. And our SmackDown guy, Greg Parks, will lead us through, will walk us through what's coming up next Sunday in Philadelphia. Greg.
Six matches have been announced thus far for WWE Battleground, which takes place next Sunday. Not a lot of room left on the card for anything to be announced on Tuesday night SmackDown, the final go-home show, but maybe one match in a pre-match show could take place. AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens, as mentioned before the break, that match is for the WWE United States Championship after AJ Styles defeated Kevin Owens at the MSG House Show last week. Styles goes in as champion. This past Tuesday on SmackDown, we almost got an AJ Styles versus John Cena feud when AJ Styles opened up the United States Championship to a challenge. Of course, Kevin Owens interrupted, and that turned into a tag team match at the close of the show where AJ Styles and John Cena defeated the team of Kevin Owens and Rusev. Speaking of John Cena and Rusev, those two go one-on-one in a flag match at Battleground. Those two have a history together as well, having faced off at some other major pay-per-views in the past. So they're rekindling their feud as Rusev gets back into the swing of things on the SmackDown brand. Shinsuke Nakamura meets Baron Corbin in a singles match. That was another match that was slated to take place this past Tuesday, but a pre-match attack prevented that from happening. So we've had backstage attacks between the two. We've had attacks in the arena. So this feud is slowly gathering steam as we head into Battleground and looks like it's going to be a real, as JR would call it, slobber knocker at Battleground between those two. We have a fatal five-way elimination match in which they will determine the number one contender for the SmackDown Women's Championship, a match that will presumably take place at SummerSlam, looking for a number one contender to face the champion, Naomi. Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Natalya, Tamina, and Lana will battle in that five-way match. Really a toss-up at this point. If you're looking at Naomi as a babyface, certainly the heels, Natalya, Tamina, Lana, also perhaps the underdogs in the match would seem to be the ones that perhaps aren't as underdog as you would think heading into the match. Also, the Usos take on the New Day in a tag team match for the SmackDown Tag Team Championship. These two teams went at it at the last SmackDown brand pay-per-view, a match that ended in a countout, so the Usos retained their tag team titles. A couple weeks ago, we had the famous rap battle hosted by Wale on SmackDown, in which the New Day were crowned winners, although I think people watching at home may have taken more from the Usos. That will be an interesting matchup, as well as the main event. WWE Champion Jinder Mahal faces Randy Orton in the return of a Punjabi prison match. This will be the third match these two have had on pay-per-view. So this, you would think, would be the blow-off, given it's a Punjabi prison match. And the next pay-per-view for the SmackDown brand will be the co-branded SummerSlam show in August. So I can't imagine them going with a fourth Jinder Mahal-Randy Orton match at SummerSlam, so either Jinder wins and gets over Randy Orton, faces another babyface challenger, perhaps John Cena, at SummerSlam, or Randy Orton wins the title here and goes against a top heel contender, whoever that may be, at SummerSlam.
But either way, when it comes to the Punjabi prison match, well, if I can get this thing to work.
Shut up and take my money! Shut up and take my money!
Yeah, no, this is not... Yeah, exactly. Okay, now, what can we expect? Now, do we have anything signed for Tuesday, which is SmackDown in Birmingham?
Not to my knowledge. They ended the show this past week with the tag team match. Certainly, Sami Zayn versus Mike Bennett has
been
building.
That's true.
Something perhaps with the tag team of Fandango and Tyler Breeze might be in the cards, but nothing I don't believe has been announced for Tuesday night.
Okay. So, but we something will happen, and something will indeed happen as part of Raw other than Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe, because you can't fill 3 hours with that. Okay, so, I mean, really the match we're looking forward to next Sunday is AJ Styles and Kevin Owens. Nothing against the other matches, but this one will probably be the best. Is there a match that that could have a surprisingly high quality other than that?
I think John Cena and Rusev have shown they have pretty good chemistry. I don't know if it would necessarily be a surprise if that was a really good match, but Rusev looks to be in tremendous shape, coming back from his injury, and probably wants to make a good impression in his first real run since the Superstar Shakeup, and he's been moved to SmackDown. So I think that could be a sneaky good match at some point. Shinsuke Nakamura and Baron Corbin seems like a Styles clash to me, and I don't know necessarily how that's going to work out. We've seen Shinsuke Nakamura sort of on autopilot for much of his main roster run. So I suppose there's a small possibility that they really tear the house down, but I would put that on the I'll see it when I believe it category.
Yeah, that seems fair. Okay. Let's see. Other news, we're actually getting closer to NXT TakeOver Brooklyn 3, I guess. It looks like, and you know, I don't think these are really any spoilers. It looks like after the last past couple of weeks, we are going to end up with Bobby Roode against Drew McIntyre. And my question on that has to be, you know, we've seen WWE fans and NXT fans embrace, you know, Finn Balor, Shinsuke Nakamura, guys who, you know, aren't exactly the prototypical WWE babyface. Do you think that there is a potential for some backlash when somebody who was, you know, only several years ago considered a chosen one, like Drew Galloway, gets that top spot?
Well, there's another aspect of the NXT fandom as well, and that's success on the independent scene. So Drew McIntyre was probably pushed too much too soon in WWE, but he went out and earned his stripes on the independent scene after he left WWE. He put in some great work in TNA and comes back with, I mean, he's got basically an all-new rep, I think, for the fans who are watching NXT, and I think he's earned that respect after... Yeah, I think there was a time when people saw him. He was handpicked by Vince McMahon. Vince went on TV and introduced Drew McIntyre as basically the next big thing. So there was certainly some opportunity for backlash there, but I think he's kind of wiped that away with how well he's performed in Evolve and some other independent wrestling promotions after leaving WWE.
Okay. Iconic One is in the chat room saying... after watching the Tower of Doom match on Wayback Playback, I'm ready for a Punjabi prison match. Well, that's definitely one way to look at it. And by the way, if you want to check out Wayback Playback or read Greg Parks' weekly columns, go VIP, pwtorch.com/govip. $10 a month and $99 a year, plus occasional specials. It's amazing what you get by going VIP, and help support a nice independent pro wrestling website. All right, we're going to come back. Hopefully we'll get a few more of your calls, 515-605-9345. And Greg and I will wrap things up after this timeout.
I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Very excited, a very exciting time indeed to be part of the PW Torch family and part of the PW Torch Livecast brand and part of the Wade Keller brand. Pat McNeil, along with Greg Parks, hoping to be your Sunday night tradition here on PW Torch Livecast, and want to thank you for being part of our first episode of Wrestling Night in America. Things will hopefully heat up again next week when we have next Sunday Randy Orton and Jinder Mahal going at it. And, of course, thank you to Kevin Harvey. He was very helpful in helping us break down the Mae Young Classic and what's going on with women wrestling. And we think, Greg, that some of the non-pay-per-view weeks can also be good programs as well.
Oh, I hope so. That's why I'm here.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. All right, we haven't gotten our live results from people at the shows in Lexington and Tallahassee, but we can tell you some of what happened around the horn last night. It was WWE in Pensacola, the SmackDown brand. Interesting stuff happening. I don't think John Cena. I think John Cena was on Raw this weekend with the Raw crew. But your main event looked like one of them is Shinsuke Nakamura against Dolph Ziggler, and we've all seen that match. And believe it or not, Jinder Mahal defending against the U.S. champion AJ Styles.
Interesting.
I don't know. What do you think, Greg? Do you think it actually? I mean, I think part of the problem, obviously, is that Jinder Mahal went from 0 to 60 and became WWE champion in a short period of time. Do you think it hurts AJ at this point to lose to Jinder Mahal, or do you think it's just do you think they should be trying to protect him with DQ or countout finishes?
Well, that would be ideal, but I guess you don't want to do that in the main event of a house show. It hurts me a little more to see them do that match with Styles as United States champion. I think if Styles hadn't won the title at MSG, I'd be a little more okay with seeing that match result. Then again, who knows? They could be prepping Styles to face Mahal at SummerSlam. If Kevin Owens beats Styles, wins the United States championship back on Sunday, that would leave Styles open for possibly facing Mahal at SummerSlam if it's not John Cena. So, you can read that a couple different ways. You can read it as a good sign by saying, hey, maybe they're trying this out and doing a dry run of this match and they want to do it at SummerSlam. Or you could take the negative side and say, hey, Styles is U.S. champion, is losing to a guy who was a jobber 6 months ago. So it depends on what mood you're in, I guess, is how you read that.
Okay, meanwhile, over on the Raw brand, they were in beautiful Huntington, West Virginia last night. And it was Heath Slater's birthday, and Heath Slater's from West Virginia. And B, John Cena was there, which meant you got John Cena and Bray Wyatt in the main event. Cena ends up winning that one. And something we talked about last week seems to be coming to fruition as Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose joined forces again, defeating Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas in a tag team match.
Yeah, that's interesting because it was made such a point on Raw that hey, I'm not your partner, I'm not your teammate, I'm not your friend. It was just kind of happenstance that they ended up together in a situation where they were taking someone out, and then at the end of the show it happened again. So and Pat, you brought this up last Sunday after the Great Balls of Fire livecast, suggesting that Rollins and Ambrose should go for the tag titles on the Raw brand, and then we saw them put together on Raw the next night. So I give you a lot of credit for seeing that.
Well, sometimes you get lucky. All right, tomorrow on Raw, where it says that Dean Ambrose will open Raw with an interview. Oh boy, kids, an interview. Yeah, that's fantastic. Also, John Cena, not expected on Raw, will be at the SmackDown house show in Columbus, Georgia. We'll be looking for a report from that. Let's see what else happened this weekend. Yes, Cody Rhodes still the Northeast Wrestling Tag Team the Northeast Wrestling Heavyweight Champion with a win over Jack Swagger, Greg.
Interesting. You know, Swagger has not been, I don't think, a real hot name on the independent scene like the Cody Rhodes and like some of the other guys who've left WWE. So it's interesting to see him get this opportunity to face Cody Rhodes in a rather large independent wrestling company.
Yeah.
So this could lead to, you know, depending on how the performance was, and I haven't read any reports on how well he did, but that could certainly open some more doors for Swagger going forward.
Right. Let's see. The G1 opening night is taking place tonight, 2 a.m. Eastern time, just a few hours from now. Looks like Tetsuya Naito taking on Kota Ibushi, Okada and Gato versus Toriano and Jado, and Hiroshi Tanahashi versus Zack Sabre Jr. You know, I might have to start watching more of this.
It totally disrupts your sleep schedule, so be prepared unless you want to watch it on delay, which is probably much, much more palatable. The first night is usually one of the bigger nights, I think, of the G1. So, you know, if there is one, if you're kind of on the fence about which ones to watch live because you can't stay up every night to watch them all live, probably the final couple nights and then the first night, I think, would be the one that I would say and this is someone who's only watched the G1 for the last couple of years. Those would be the nights I'd say were the ones you'd want to watch as they happen.
Yeah. All right. We have a caller, 732 area code 732. Please state your name and town. You're on Wrestling Night in America. Hello.
Hey guys, DIMP member Scott from Jamesburg, New Jersey. How you guys doing tonight?
Doing great, Scott. What's on your mind?
Well, first, just congratulations on the new show. I'm really looking forward to hearing you guys, and it's going to be great.
Okay.
So,
well, we're looking forward to doing it, so that'll work.
Well, guys, I'm thinking I want to talk about what the big shows we're talking about. Can we look ahead to SummerSlam?
Okay, yeah, we can. You know, I know Greg and I talked about it. Jinder versus Cena sounds, you know, it sounds almost like a lock when you start thinking about it, Greg.
Yeah, you know, I brought up the possibility of Jinder versus AJ Styles as well, but you know, I think that for a SummerSlam level show, now that you've got John Cena back into the fold, now that you're working him back in, having him face Rusev at Battleground, it doesn't feel like a multi-month feud. It doesn't feel like a match that they're going to try and have a rematch at SummerSlam. It feels like a one-off, so you're left with nothing for Cena after that. You've got to figure Mahal and Orton's going to be done after this as well with the Punjabi prison stipulation. So the stars seem to align for Cena versus Mahal at SummerSlam.
Right, and you know, it's the winner of Roman Reigns Samoa Joe is supposed to get Brock Lesnar, and if that's the case, it's probably Roman Reigns. But there has been a groundswell, Greg, towards making the title match a four-way match, and having Joe, Reigns, Braun Strowman, and Brock Lesnar, which would be chaotic. I think would be the word to describe it.
Yeah, it definitely would be. You know, I think even a three-way with Joe, Reigns, and Lesnar would be really interesting. You add Strowman into the mix, and I don't know how long they're going to sell his injuries for. One would have to imagine he would be back wrestling before SummerSlam. So, you know, it wouldn't even surprise me to see him get involved in that match tomorrow night, make it a no contest, force Kurt Angle's hand to make it a four-way at SummerSlam. But yeah, I think, you know, all of those guys in their own way have certainly earned an opportunity, and all of those guys at one time or another have been rumored to face Lesnar one-on-one. You just want to do it in a way where it doesn't feel like you're running through, you know, a Lesnar versus Reigns singles match, a Lesnar versus Strowman singles match, even another Lesnar versus Joe singles match, all which could mean something down the line if you save it. Where you had to weigh that against putting them all in a match with Lesnar at SummerSlam.
Plus, I think if you do Reigns versus Lesnar straight up, you know, either Reigns finally has to beat him, Or, you know, to borrow the old Jim Cornette line, Roman looks like a plate of warm urine.
Yeah, I don't really think there's a reason you have to do Reigns versus Lesnar at SummerSlam. I think you can get away with a three-way or get away with a four-way and still have that and still save that big one-on-one match for down the line.
Well, the reason would be that they want to have the title, you know, defended at every Raw pay-per-view. That's the main reason they decide to do that.
Well,
okay,
you could do that in the four-way or three-way, too. You could have Lesnar drop it. Then he's got the excuse that, hey, I didn't drop the title in a one-on-one match for whenever he comes back and wants another shot at the title.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. They might do that. Also, let's see. Observer is reporting that Chris Cyborg might be at SummerSlam because, I guess.
Oh, boy. I don't know.
That's what the women's division needs is Chris Cyborg.
Well, especially you know with the four horsewomen of the MMA being in the Mae Young Classic. I mean, how many? And who knows? She may just be backstage and visiting and not have any on camera role. But certainly, I think this kind of opens the door to working with her in the future. But when they're already running the four horsewomen, I won't say angle yet, but they are very visible at the Mae Young Classic, and then you bring in Chris Cyborg, it's you wonder where they're going with all of this.
Right. Okay, what else were you thinking about for SummerSlam, Scott?
Well, you know what, though, Pat? I really like what you were saying, too, and Greg, I don't know if either of you heard Wade say on the hotline, he had brought up the possibility of Ambrose and Rollins together, and you know, you really have a chance to differentiate this tag team rank, this tag team you know, on Raw, there's some good teams out there when you really think about it. I think like the Hart, I think they're going in the direction of Hardy's Revival, which I think would be really is going to be very exciting. And you know, if you put them together, remake the Shield to take the tag team titles, you know, you could really set up Revival and give them a real strong push off the gate, right out of the gate, put them over the Hardys and
Hello, Greg, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Scott had to drop off. But I think he was on his way to making a good point in that. Imagine setting up for SummerSlam not only the Hardys and the Revival, but Ambrose and Rollins against Sheamus and Cesaro.
Yeah. All of a sudden, you've got the makings of a pretty strong tag division, and this is sort of an opportunity to reintroduce the Revival, sort of have them make their debut again because Dash was injured so soon after they debuted. It's almost like a quick reset. So, you know, working with the Hardys, I think, is going to hopefully really benefit the Revival as far as, you know, getting the timing down for the main roster tag team matches, the Hardys. We're just as accomplished tag team technicians as the Revival at one time. So if I could share some of their trade secrets with the Revival, I think this is really the A1 example of using veteran talent to get over younger talent. And I think it's going to be a really good mix between these two. And then, you know, Rollins and Ambrose, these are two singles guys who really are directionless at this point. Ambrose seems to be over The Miz. Rollins lost twice in a row now to Bray Wyatt. I think they need something totally different to sink their teeth into to kind of re-energize them, and I think putting them in a tag team is a great way to do it, and you've got Sheamus and Cesaro, who right now are looking for challengers, and putting Rollins Ambrose against Cesaro Sheamus at SummerSlam, that feels like a big deal. You know, this isn't taking a lower card tag team like Breezango or the Colognes and matching them up with a Sheamus Cesaro level team at SummerSlam. I mean, that doesn't feel like a SummerSlam match. Whereas if you put Rollins and Ambrose together against the champions, that feels like a big match.
Okay. Let's see here. Okay. We thank you for tuning in to Wrestling Night in America. Coming up this week, I'll go through the other new shows, the revamped lineup. Now that it's a Keller-free site here with Wade being on the Podcast One Radio Network, Monday, tomorrow night, PW Torch Livecast presents MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans with MMA Torch's Mike Hisco and friends at 7 Eastern. Tuesday, 1 p.m. Eastern, Best of the PW Torch Livecast. which will be, I'm guessing, include some of the interviews that Wade Keller has done, and maybe, if Wade's feeling generous, some of the crazy live casts that I've been involved in and Greg has been involved with over the years. Wednesday, Jim Valley, who does a VIP show with me, is going to host the PW Torch Nostalgia Hour, 5 p.m. Eastern. And, Greg, I'm told that this first week is going to be focused on The Glow.
Ooh, well, that's timely, given the Netflix series, so that'll be an interesting listen.
Yes, and if you're a VIP member, I know that episode 149 of Wayback Playback just dropped, and you can pick up all 3 hours and be a part of Great American Bash 1988 with us, including the Tower of Doom, of course. Thursday night, 10 Eastern, immediately following Impact. Mike and Andrew do the Impact post-game show. Mike McMahon, Andrew Socek, we do a very good job. And Rich Fans Deep Dive, debuts Saturday, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's going to be very deep, so check that one out. Greg, thanks again for being part of this, and we're gonna do this every week, and it's going to get better and better.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of working with you, Pat, and looking forward to meeting up every week here on the livecast.
All right, and I want to thank all of you. If you'd like to be a bigger part of the PW Torch revolution, you can become a VIP member, and our announcer guy is going to fill in all the details on everything you get with a PW Torch VIP membership.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s, but you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject. And it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and Sure Dog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Wade Keller Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Shad Radican, the WWE Future Past Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.